Ever wish that you could take the mystery out of search engine results? Well, now you can. Discover how you can dominate the first three pages of Google with Key Difference Media. Go to keydifferencemedia.com/dominate. Content marketing unlocked.
Well, good morning. Welcome to another edition of 4D Leverage, the Blog Talk Radio program, hosted by myself, James Craddock, and my co-host, Karnika Yashwant of Key Difference Media. Good morning, Mr. Key.
Good morning.
See how we make you be on our morning when it's not really always morning everywhere in the world, but that's okay. Oh, man. I saw a graph online of the curve of content marketing impact, and it showed kind of like this bell curve where it shot up to a very high point because everybody is excited about it, and this is kind of a typical technology bell curve, and then it drops down, and then it finally finds its maturity and stabilizes somewhere halfway between that bell curve. And we've seen that all the way across. Well, we saw it in Silicon Valley with the bubble when it burst and dropped. And then even businesses that had failed during the bubble came back and found their footing because of one small shift or another. Just interesting. And the article was talking about how we are now kind of in this downward spin from the initial excitement of content marketing. Because once we got to a point where we could measure its effectiveness and understand exactly what was coming out of the investment going in, many people discovered it was so hard to do that they weren't getting back what they wanted. And, of course, those that either couldn't or wouldn't fell off. And now we're kind of in this plane where people are looking for the answer to this major problem. And really, that entire bell curve can be blamed on the title of our show, Content Marketing is 20% Inspiration and 80% Perspiration, because it's one thing to put your heart and soul into creating a blog post, right, and to maybe make a video. Gosh, that's the hardest thing for me, getting on video and being clear and hitting all the points, and it just seems to take 32 takes. And finally, you get the one that you think is okay. You get it out there on YouTube. Maybe you put it on a couple other channels. You get it out on Twitter, your Facebook. You can get all that done inside of an hour maybe. But then you've limited how much capacity you have in other areas to get probably things that are more priority business done. Now, this is a age-old story, but it doesn't have to be, and it's not going to be forever, because I don't think that we all can continue communicating and putting content out on the internet and it becoming so highly reliant that we don't step up and have a way to, in our own niches, get it done. So I'm Mr. Key, we of course know, if you follow the radio show, you've heard by Key Difference Media, you understand that they are a business that does this, and they do it with excellent quality and care, many different shows from a high level. We've talked about the process, but we haven't talked about, I mean, I want to give people a real sense of how hard, and you went through a decade to build what your able to wield now as a sharp two-edged sword, but there were a lot of challenges during that decade, and there were a lot of things that you tried that didn't work, and a lot of lessons that you learned from that. And I'd kind of like to draw on that. I'd maybe like to put you on the spot and say, hey, can you tell us like one of the big stories, something that happened? I know you've spent multiple 72-hour shifts, you know, getting things done and whatnot, but has anything ever happened in such a way that it was obvious you needed to make a change, yet maybe you think this is something people are duplicating in their own content marketing efforts that could shed some light on that?
Right. So starting from your duplication part, I would be the first person to be really happy if people are duplicating their efforts and trying to adopt these things in their own cycle, because it makes the industry more powerful, it makes the industry more viable, and it generates more interest, which will bring about success for everyone. And as more people start following all these different systems, the entire industry will have more new tools coming up, and it becomes more and more easy for small business owners to do more of content marketing. And that's the ideal goal for everything that we do here. Talking about a story, the biggest difficulty that in the initial time we had is bringing all these different elements in control. So just imagine there are 350 people. Every project comes through. There are 22 plus skill sets involved, and it has to go from one person to another. They cannot use emails. If you just start sending emails to and fro, tagging people for, you know, I have completed this, now it's for you to process, then it's going to go so crazy, and it's going to almost be impossible to manage it. So we wanted a system which is perfect for managing something like this, and existing project management tools cannot accommodate it, because you could add all the project structures and you could add all the templates and workflows and checklist of items. But what if you have let's say a project comes up with 10 assets, or another project comes up with 100 assets. Now you cannot go back to your project management system and just create 100 different checkboxes for it, because it has multiple layers for it to pass through. So we were working across defining our own system, and it has taken us over the last 10 years to perfect it, and we continue to perfect it in making it more and more powerful and viable as we go, because right now, from where we started, it has been a huge leap and a lot of progress. So with so many people working on same set of projects at the same time, working at different corners, different different areas of the project. So one would be doing a keyword research, one would be doing a design of infographic, one would be doing a quality check of the slides that has been created, another would be going through the content part of the quality check, whether every word is properly placed, is there any gap or wrong punctuation or submit. Even when designers copy something and create a design like an infographic, there are cases when something might be copy-pasted wrong or copy-pasted twice. Someone has to recheck that. So one thing that I always say to my clients is no one is perfect. Everyone makes mistakes. But how effectively we find those mistakes is the skill here. So I'm not no one can go and say as a designer that they are absolutely flawless. No writer can go and say that their work does not need proofing or editing. Everyone does mistakes, and how we go about fixing those mistakes and how we make that process effective is the question here. So our process is in a way where there might be dozens and dozens of people working on the same project, different parts of the project at the same time, and everyone knows what their next task is. When someone completes something, they know that there is a next item for them to work on. They know what it is that they should carry on and how they update and report to other people. So this is more of a both centralized and decentralized at the same time, and has created a combination of a cloud-based infrastructure through which everyone can function together. I would not use the word collaborate, because not all areas are collaborated. In fact, majority parts of the project are not in collaboration. Everyone does their part individually, and the system does the collaboration for them. So getting this entire system built out was one of the biggest challenges, and it was something that has kept us awake for various nights, sleepless. So, yep.
I would bet. I was looking for any particular stories. Did you have any catastrophes along the way in the early days that kind of woke you up in the middle of the night? One of those things where, oh no, stop the presses, everything's gone wrong.
Not those kind of catastrophes, but we do have certain things which are repetitive on a daily basis. So let's say, those issues that we face or that we have faced, if you try to put that in a smaller number, you will be able to see the size of the problem. For example, let's say you have a team of 5 people or 10 people, and let's say that there is a project deadline approaching and a designer is on a leave on a particular day and you are unable to do a delivery, that is a problem at a level of 10 people. It's so hard to do a delivery by getting a new designer trained and in that position to take it up and deliver it. So that's something that would be faced on a smaller level. But on a bigger level, the problem is a little bit different. So someone is not available on a day, someone else can definitely take the task up, but what if there is no proper guidelines or documentation for them to follow through? So those issues in the initial times have wasted a lot of time on a quality check process, because there are things that would come in and go through cycles and cycles and cycles of quality check and keep getting rejected every time. So when we initially started all this QC process, we had 5 layers of quality check. And there has been cases when new people are onboarded. Let's say we, you know, in the initial time when we did onboarding, we did only 3 months of training and then we onboarded people to projects. Right now, we have a 1 year of incubation period before they work on the actual thing. But when we had those 3 months period, there were times when some of the members of the team would be, you know, kind of getting frustrated because something comes in and they do their work, they send it across, it gets accepted in the first level, gets accepted in the second level, the third level, it goes to the fourth level, but it gets rejected in the fifth level and it has to go through all the 5 levels once again after they make the change. And this does give in a kind of situation where they get very conscious about what they do, and either they end up taking more time than what they should, or if they don't do that, they end up wasting time of everyone else. So these things are more of a process things that does act like a catastrophe at this level. So imagine this process happening with dozens and dozens of people, and you have few dozen complaints sitting in your inbox about the process when you wake up in the morning, and you cannot stop the process to improve it because this is something that's running. You cannot pass it, you cannot stop it, you cannot change it overnight. It is, you know, if it's 5 people sitting in a room, you could just change it over an email or just shout it out in the room and you could make a change. But here, anything that you impact cannot be impacted to everyone. You need to do that for, let's say, a small group of people and test it out and then deploy it to everyone else. And these kind of things are something that it's like a never-ending story. The story continues, repeats, and comes in different way, comes in different form, which does hold you accountable and responsible, at the same time helpless in some of the times. And you can fix it. It just takes more time, and it has to go through a process for it to get sorted. It cannot happen immediately. That's the challenge.
So I have this great appreciation for the patience with which you have endured to bring it to this point, because we're all familiar with that kind of a scenario on a smaller scale of where you just have to keep scrambling and keep pushing and keep getting it done. But to have brought it to this level, that's an amazing accomplishment. But what strikes me as you're speaking is just, okay, so we're talking about how hard it is to make content and make it consistent and make it so you can rely on it as a variable that is unwavering. Because in any kind of analytics, having as few variables and more constants makes it a whole lot easier to create predictions off the data that comes in. And one of the things that I see with when you're reproducing and syndicating the content is that there is this stability that is much higher than I think you can get anywhere, to be honest, but definitely much higher than most of us are outputting with. So you must have a level of integrity amongst your employees that surpasses an average standard, if you will. And this whole one-year indoctrination process and the level 5 levels of QC seem to lend itself to only bringing on people that have the ability to fight, to get it done, to chase after, you know, the level of perfection that your process demands. But is there I imagine there's some level of camaraderie. Do you break your entire production into teams? Does one person always do the same thing, like on a production line, or can you kind of take us into the room and just give us an idea of, like, if we were standing there with you, what's going on right now? Can you move us around the room? Is it in sections? I'm very intrigued.
Right. So the entire structure is divided by departments. So let's say there is a department of syndication. Their task is to only syndicate contents out on a daily basis. So from morning to night, every day, they only have to syndicate content pieces. If someone's task is to register accounts in different sites, that's the only thing that they do. If someone is going to only focus on creating templates for the client projects and design, creating the branding guidelines, that's what they do for all the projects. There are certain people with dual roles, which happens only more at the senior level. Let's say it's a senior designer. He would be designing the templates, and at the same time, he would also do the normal design if the template work is not there, because template work is a one-time thing. Creating the brand guidelines is a one-time thing for the project, and he might not really have to do it every day for everyone. So on the senior level, as it moves higher in the ladder, there are people who have dual roles, but as it goes down, it is same one task for one person for his time. But we do have the ability and infrastructure for them to learn other areas to hone their skills, because we as an organization need people, for example, for a mid-level and higher level management, we don't want people coming from outside. It is very hard to accommodate and adopt someone who is coming from outside to this process at a manager level. They need to evolve from within. If they need to evolve from within, let's say a manager of a particular syndication and registration department, he should have multiple skills. He should understand keyword research. He should understand syndicating. He should understand quality checking. He should understand reporting process, formatting, and a lot of science behind it. So when someone needs to be of that level, it has to be groomed from within the organization, and we have a process where they can get a cross-skill training. They can work with other colleagues in other departments, and they can grow their skills along those lines. But their primary role, as in the task which they perform day-to-day, would be set to the task which they have been passed by the particular department heads and the process. So because we understand the need to balance between getting people to grow, evolve, and learn new things to fill up more new positions on the top end. At the same time, to maintain the quality consistency, we cannot test someone out on a client project. That's the precise reason why we have incubation, because we need someone to go through on internal things, on different dummy areas, before they could actually start working on a production project or production areas. So when they do a cross-skill training, they still have the structure of primary task and secondary task. So because I believe personally that people's skills enhance as they do same thing for longer. They would increase the depth of their expertise as they increase the width of their knowledge and understanding. But the expertise or the skill gets honed as they do the same thing. So, for example, if someone is doing syndication for a month, he is very different in his speed and he's very different in his capability and precision compared to a guy who has been doing that for 2 years. And because in syndication, you come across so many problems. Sites don't work all the time. Sites have upload issues. Sites have something or other to deal with. And a guy who is experienced with more and more problems along the cycle, he understands it better. So that there are departments which are segmented into smaller units. We call it as roles. So when the entire structure of ours is divided by role system. So when an individual plays multiple roles, he's still designated with two roles, and he functions at one role in a primary way. So one of the reasons this functions, the way it functions, is our structure is not just an organizational structure. It is not something that we just follow as an organization hierarchy, but it has a lot more to do with the security of the system and the project management. Our entire project management is completely tied into the way the organization functions. They are both parallel. So, when you talk about the file system, the way it is organized, the way what people can see, what people can edit, what people can move, it is all very much segmented. So they only see the files that they need to see, and the files that they see on one day is not going to be the same the next day. So it is more like consider that you're in a big submarine. You have these little windows, and what you see outside in the water, the fishes and the corals and everything else, that experience is limited to the window that you see through. And if you're really diving out of the water, there's a whole world of things going on. But when you look through the window, you have a limited vision, and that helps you both to get yourself out of the clutter of out of all these so many cogs that's running at the same time. And at the same time, it allows you to focus and increases the security of the system. We cannot afford to have you know, because we are representing the brand of a client. We are talking on their behalf. We are creating things for them. And we cannot have even a slightest deviation in terms of information being shared to teams, which is not supposed to be shared with someone. So, if again, coming back to the day-to-day process, yes, they start the task and they finish the task, and that's the one thing that they stick on to, and it is all segmented by departments and roles. So it is more of a, you know, if you look at the crowdsourcing model in the world right now, it functions in the same way, but it all happens in one place. It all happens in one location, just that people are not available everywhere around the world, but it happens in one place, but the effect is same. So design comes through, a design of a particular project would be marked in certain particular tags and criteria. So let's say design is a premium design. It is for a level of project which is enterprise, and it has its own set of rules, regulations, and guidelines to follow. Only designers who are certified to work in the enterprise level designs, they will be put into that task. They are the ones who will see it, and they can pick it and they can work. So it's like a list of things for them to perform, which is common to the entire department, to the allowed people. And they definitely can pick, okay, I'm taking this, I'm functioning it, and they're completing it, they mark it as done, and it disappears from there, and they work on the next item in the list. So it's not like individually assigned. It is assigned as a team, as based on the roles, but it is acted upon by an individual as a single person. So it is a mix of both individual member and the department, and it is a beautiful system. You know, if you see it work, if you see the kind of updates and the speed that it progresses, it looks so beautiful, and it almost feels like you're just flying in the sky.
Well, it absolutely feels that way. I mean, I am intrigued. Like, you have designed your own work process flow, probably created your own infrastructure behind it. I assume you wrote pretty much the entirety of your platform on how this all flows through.
Yeah, it is all documented.
It's all documented. And so your process, that control is, I mean, is this a software that anybody uses, or that you purchase commercially, or that you customize into your own process, or is it just a collaboration of all the necessary tools and the processes really in the documentation?
Okay, so for our actual project management and collaboration internally, we use Google Apps Enterprise, the premium one, and the Google Apps by itself is not secure in all ways. It has its own limitations. So we have done a lot of custom scripting. We have done all our customization in it to enable us to bring it to a level where it has to be. For example, in Google Apps, you will not, you know, we don't want anybody to copy a file. We don't want anyone to change the access by allowing someone else to come in. So there are things that has to happen which is beyond the scope of Google App, and it has to be scripted. It has to be coded. And so, for example, now let's say for some weird reason, we need to do a complete lockdown of all the project management. So we can, in one button, in one click, we have scripts that can lock access to all the files, and no one will be able to access anything. They will not be able to see anything, even if they have a link to it, or if they had previous access to it. Or if, let's say, one of the member in the team has disappeared and we need to protect the access, it just takes one click, and we have everything secured from him, and he will not be able to use it. So this system has evolved to a point where it is beyond just Google Apps, mostly because of how we programmed it and how we modeled around it. But it uses their infrastructure. But most of the things that we do are not something that can come right out of the bat with your system.
Sure. Now, these security levels aren't because you have people rampantly running through your place, pushing buttons and destroying data. It's because you interact with clients that require that level of security, and you're also taking steps to certify yourself along these lines, I believe.
Correct. So we are in the process of getting ourselves certified for ISO 9001 and ISO 27000. So this does have certain guidelines that we need to meet. At the same time, the clients that we work with are conscious about their security, their data, their files, and what happens with it, and who sees it, who handles it. So we follow a minimalistic nature. So if someone doesn't need to see something, they don't need to see it. As simple as that. It has to have minimal touch points. if you know, we cannot shorten the process, but the process has to be what it is. But if we can reduce the number of people the data is exposed to, it is good. So we follow that minimalistic nature. And third, you know, when we deal, you know how it is with people, right? When you deal with so many people, there are people are unpredictable. You know, anything can happen anytime. Even with the two people team, three people team partners, they have so many problems to deal with. So with an organization of the size that we run with, beyond the culture, beyond the bonding and integrity of people, there are cases when mistakes can happen. You know, mistakes need not be a conscious one. It could be even a unconscious one. What if someone has a file open and by mistake they make a, you know, they press one button in a key, and they could have pressed one button in a keyboard without knowing it, and that could make a big change in the process. They could add a letter in the middle of a document, and that document would go to the design team, it will go to QC team. Everyone looks into the reference document. They might not you know, always figure it out. So it's very essential to ensure everything is taken care up to the right measures, not both for the certification, the kind of clients that we work with, the unknown mistakes that could possibly happen, and because that we work with people in the first place.
Very true, very true. We are fallible, to say the least. But your process, I'm still intrigued and fascinated with this submarine window concept because, yes, this is all digital data. So it's flowing through your office in different places at different times, and nobody really gets a complete fix on an entire project, right? Everybody only sees bits and pieces of it, and it's all disjoined, but it's kept together through the overall strategy and the flow of what's going on. Did I repurpose that correctly?
You did. There is not a single person other than me who will be able to have a complete overview. Of course, the system administrator and a couple other high level roles will be able to see the entire thing. Apart from the handful, others cannot see the entire structure and how it's running on.
Interesting. Awesome. That is amazing. And so now when we look at how much effort is being put into it and the amount of efficiency that you have systematically applied, it starts to become more obvious exactly what it takes to wield this very powerful yet difficult to manage weapon here. I'm curious about the department. So we've talked about the flow of a piece of content through your system, but maybe even backing it up. You have an intake process that begins everything, right? What's the purpose for the intake process, and kind of take us through it, and how does that whole process work with you and with your team and with the client? What's the value of it overall?
All right. So the intake process is one of the most powerful elements in the entire system. It is the easiest one and at the same time the tricky one, because we are in the business of amplifying the voice. So if there is one small mistake in the intake process in terms of the target market or the angle or the way they want to approach it, that is going to be amplified so large, so big on throughout the process, and it is not a good thing to start with. So the intake process needs its ultimate care and understanding from both sides, repeating things, just like you do in the military process. When you say something, the other person repeats it to ensure that it is actually understood the same way. So the intake process is rather, you know, talking from a technical standpoint, it's just a form that is being filled as we speak to the client, or it could be a form that they fill and then we speak about it. But the essence of that part is all about understanding. So we need to know who they're trying to target, what language they're trying to communicate, what is the brand's need to communicate in a logical way, emotional way, and in a holistic way, what are the different elements that they want to see in their content. We all understand their brand, the brand colors, things from the, you know, things which are obvious from the logo, but there's a brand voice, the brand persona, which many businesses might not even have clarity themselves, or those who do have, they might not be following it through. So getting all that put together in a way it is understandable, referenceable, repeatable, leverageable is a huge exercise. So the intake process follows through both the marketing side, the business, the core, the heart of the business, and the language, the words, the emotions, everything. So it is much beyond just receiving the content pieces and knowing call to action. It has to revisit the core of the business itself. It has to start from, you know, preferably the business owner is the right person to do it. But wherever the marketing managers are equipped, or the vice presidents of the company are equipped to handle it, that would be a great place to start too. But yes, this information is very powerful, very, 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 very vital, important for the entire process. And we ideally ensure that once everything is documented, we discuss it internally to check whether something is missing. So, for example, let's say the client says that their voice is all about being direct, but if their website or their other sales material do not reflect that, that is a possible place where there might have been a confusion in understanding it, or maybe their website just didn't follow that through and they need it the way they have requested us to be. So we ensure that these checks are read, and we go and re-verify with them, okay, here is what you wanted us to do, but there are places when it is not the same case. So we just wanted to make sure what you gave us is correct, or if there is a change to be done along those lines. So we go through it both internally and with the client, and with multiple segment of people, like senior editors. They have a way to go through the content, the language separately, and visit it. There's a branding team which contains the designers and editors, who has their own checklist and perspective on how they view this part of the process. So there are teams which should go through it, and they would have their own questions or odd things out of the checklist which they want to address, and then those things are taken through to the client and processed separately. But again, as this process goes on, we don't stall. We follow a methodology where everything runs at the same time. So it is not a pipeline. It is not a it doesn't happen 1, 2, 3. Multiple things happens at the same time, and as it goes on in a as it all happens, we follow iterative nature. So we go on, we find a change, and we make that change across wherever this data has gone through. The QC checks are updated with the new information, and it all passes through it. So yeah, that's the intake process and the CAD that it has to go there.
So the intake process serves you as well as the client, because it ensures that you get everything right at the beginning, because it doesn't sound like it's easy to accept a change and move it through such a complex system, though you have built in that obvious awareness that that's going to happen. So right. Once the intake process is in and your client now takes the they're taking their assets, whether they have existing assets that they're going to contribute or whether they are going to be producing regular produce assets on an ongoing basis. They have, through the setup process, created a way for those assets to be delivered to you, and your team now takes it. Now, does that, in this window type of process, is there a window and a number of people standing around that window looking through it at everything that comes in at one portal? Or even from the beginning, is there a segmentation of where of each client going down the line in different tracks? That may be hard to... Is it kind of a bottleneck there where everybody's looking at it, or where one person is acting as traffic cop, maitre d' of the submarine?
Right. So there is no bottleneck in terms of traffic routing there. It ideally goes through based on the tags which I explained earlier. So who is the type of client? There are a few, apart from the obvious, like enterprise, small business, creative business, and non-English, let's say the different languages. These are some obvious changes, but there are certain areas which are beyond this. There are certain kind of clients who would say, okay, I don't want to do anything in the process. I want you to take care of everything at your side. All I want is results. They are hands off and they function at a different level. They just want us to do it on a month-on-month basis. They don't want to be bothered about it. They trust, believe, and know what we do is right. And there are certain corporate clients who would like to be hands-on on everything. They'd like to approve every part of the process. They like to add and check at their side to make sure everything is correct as they wanted it. So even based on the type of client, their preference, we have a segmentation that happens internally. So it's almost like a fast track and segmented track, the kind of risk that we could take. For example, if the client is ready with us doing things to bring about results, we would have areas of deviation that we would change things for the better. If we find an area of improvement that we need to do for a client, there's no point going back to the client asking about it, because it's our duty to bring about the results here and we need to make the change. So we do those things in that particular area. But if it's a case where it has to go through proper systems and we need verification and approval for every part of the every piece in the system, then it follows through a different cycle. So it's all tagged. Gotcha. Based on these. And when a project comes in, it gets tagged automatically. So the project coordinator and the project manager assigned to it would be based on these criteria. So that's where the that's where the assignment happens. But once it is assigned, the only people on the higher level are segmented based on this on a manual basis. But as it goes down, it is all systematized. So except the project manager level, we don't need to do the traffic management below there.
Okay, so you're going to take let's say you take a textual written blog post from a client, and what does the decision process look like on how you decide what sort of imagery and what sort of, because you're basically taking a piece of content and you are elaborating on it. You're giving it the ability to be formatted and to be received, whether it's through video or image or an image with a text on it or whatever. So what kind of creative process do you go through to make sure that you are aligning with, you know, your contribution to the client in magnifying their message? That seems like it would be, you know, when it comes to the creative side, so subjective. But you've evidently got it to a point where you're able to please a high volume of your clients, or this wouldn't work. So how do you go about that process, especially when you have to systematize it?
Right. So we have a department called content facilitators. So their duty is to facilitate the content in a way it works. So you cannot treat all contents in the same way. Some contents would have more presentable information. Some content might not be as presentable as it needs to be. So the content facilitation team has their own meetings. They follow a loose enough structure. They have a designer, they have a brand expert, they have writer, editors on their team. And this team goes through a brainstorming. They go through a creative process. And this process happens on a daily basis. So when this process goes through, they would be looking at the content, because every content of a client has a pattern. So it's their duty to find what pattern it follows. And once the pattern has been discovered, they need to find the right way to amplify it. So if, for example, a particular content is so long that infographics are not being the right methodology, what are the alternate means? Is there segments of the content which would make sense? Or is there a paraphrased version of the content that we could do which would make sense? So they take the strategical decisions on each of these areas. If the content is extremely long and the video goes more than 3 minutes or 4 minutes, does it make sense to divide this into multiple videos, or is the content so interesting enough that it can run for 10 minutes? So these decisions are taken at that point, and once it's taken, it's documented in project notes, content facilitation notes, and these notes are shared with the team. The content facilitation strategy team is the one that does all these discussions, and then the facilitators themselves, they would be dividing this content and they'll be converting that for every department separately. So the content going to the infographic design team will be different from the content going to image code design team, and the content going on to a voiceover expert for him to record the audio. So for everyone, the content is going to be different and it has its change in the flow. So for voiceovers, we need to take care that the content flows smoothly. For example, on image code, we need to make sure the content stands alone and provides value as a one-liner. So these things are analyzed, decided upon, segmented, documented, and the team processes it and then sends it out. So that is a mixture of both creative and a production process here. So wherever there's a creative process, it happens on a loosely tied up basis, because content creators themselves cannot make some choices. So what if the content creators comes with a choice and say, okay, for this particular project, we need image codes which are 3 lines long. And the designer would come back and say, that is not possible. It's going to make it too small, which is not going to appear well in mobile devices. So you know, that there is no point separating this decision-making process between two teams at separate points. It has to happen at the same time as a brainstorming session. So in these cases, there is a collaboration happening there, and they function together, make those choices, make those decisions. If needed, run it through to their clients. And when they make this project notes, there are also cases when we do a feedback for the client. So if client is creating the content and sending us, then sending them feedback on how they can make their content better from the next time, and the references and other information, guidelines and assistance that is required for them to do that, we send it across to them. You know, in the process, if a client works with us and they create their own content, they actually become a better writer.
I would think so. And not only that, but I mean, I'm thinking of your content creator seeing so many different pieces of content from so many different industries and different ideas. They start to see a level of trends of where things work that people probably are not applying whatsoever because they can't, because they don't have access to that level of awareness as well as a systematic way to apply that awareness. So I can see where just being partnered with you and engaged with you allows that kind of leverage, that kind of advantage of that feedback that you give, not just being opinionated, but being relatively deeply set in analytics and experience, you know, and understanding those different wavelengths. Those people must be, it must be dynamic to look at that much different content this way and see these different trends. Are there any trends that you see across different people's content that people do on a regular basis that, you know, do you have a common feedback for a lot of people no matter where they fit in the overall scale?
Right. So before I answer that question, let me prefix it with the fact that everything here is documented for a reason. We don't document it just to make it easier for the team, because in a project, you know, we don't really have to document it, we could just go to the person and say, okay, this is what needs to be done. But when we actually document it, we have a very powerful log to track back things for every project. Let's say we receive a project which is very, very much similar to another project which we did in the past. We have an opportunity to go back, refer to those project notes. These project documentations are not just the documentation that happens at this creative level. It also happens at every single level here. Let's say the design team goes through a quality check and there are mistakes that has been found. Every department has their own QC log, quality check log, and that log has a separate document, and that document has a list of different issues that has been faced at every step. So if they go through the QC system 5 times, there's a 5 different log there. So this log is maintained, and this log helps us to find and improvise on what needs to be done. This helps us set the standard tone for either if it's an internal process or if it is a client-specific note. For example, if you find a pattern emerging in the QC log, whenever it goes to a particular client, we know that their preference is different from what is happening, and this has to be documented and distributed to every member who is working on this. So this QC log and this documentation acts as our pattern finder, acts as a way for us to know what's happening. We have codes to the QC issues. So if the similar issues are happening, we have code and the specific error code kind of system. And our system can automatically highlight and filter out and find different places this has happened and solutions to rectify it. So it's almost, consider it like an semi-automated artificial intelligence in place. So it knows that if you're making these issues multiple times, you need to go through a particular manual for you to find and solve the issue that you as a designer are making. Or if they find that this particular pattern is emerging, they know that this there's another client in the past whose notes can be referred to make the system better. So again, that process, to be honest, is something that is hard and it is evolving. I would not say it is perfect, but it does help and does aid at different level. And I'm sure by end of the year, even that part of our artificial intelligence kind of area would be much stronger in the content marketing. So coming back to the kind of content that makes sense for a larger audience, we prefer contents which are easy to skim. So if a CEO of an organization is unable to skim a content and understand it and then decide whether he can read it or not read it. If he cannot skim it, then that content piece is probably not a good one to read. If you look at any popular blog, any popular content right now that's emerging or contents that go viral, there are two things in common. Either they're easy to skim or they're so powerful, so attractive, and they get your attention from the first moment and they maintain your attention moment to moment. If it stops at one point, people go away from the page. So either it has to be easy to skim or it has to be absolutely vital, important, attractive, and attention-grabbing. So these two are the areas that we focus on. And these trends are emerging with the best content that comes out. These are the trends that we put our clients to and also balance it with the industry-specific trends, the target market, and various other factors. But most of the content that comes to us as an input content would not be following it. 90 to 95%, they would not follow these standards. And we do an editorial level check at our end. I mean, talking from a scope standpoint, we don't have to do it, but talking from a result standpoint, it is inevitable for us to not do it, because if we don't do it, the results might not be pleasant, and that is affecting our business. So we go through an editorial process to improvise it at that point, and we always send the feedback, bring the client in loop, and if they have a content team, we educate that particular content team on what needs to be done. So we collaborate with the client on these areas to enhance the quality of content that they provide, because the content, their voice is powerful. But if their voice is powerful but hard to understand or hard to digest, then the entire process that follows it has its own effectiveness gap between what it can be or what it is limited to on this particular project. So we do all things that we can do from our side to bridge the gap and bring the quality essential from the client side as well as our side.
Okay, so along that line, and also the conversation we're having before we even launched into this, is got me a burning question going through my mind. How do you handle languages? I mean, you do business in multiple parts of the world, and I also know one of the greatest assets here is to be able to open up into another market by being able to leverage your service to translate into new languages. But, I mean, you've got multiple languages coming in and multiple languages going out, and the translation happening in between. That in itself seems to me to be a huge challenge, as big as the entire process itself.
Right. So in that case, we have a document called a culture integrity document. So the culture integrity document sets standards for new languages. Let's say when we work on a particular location, there might be birds or animals that they don't like. They don't, that they detest. There might be words which are abusive for them. There might be attitudes which they do not like. There might be a pattern which they consider or perceive to be happy pattern, and there are patterns which they don't like or feel hurt or abused. So we document these things first, and this document serves as a underlying pattern. So let's say we receive a content from a client in an English language. We would ensure that editorial team goes through and thinks about this particular document as a document in another language and suits it based on the culture integrity doc to that particular locality. Localization happens there. And once that is done, then it goes through the translation process and local voice and everything to bring it to the 100% of localization in terms of different languages. But even before something starts, it needs to be it needs to be culture fit, because words are just pointers to where we need the thoughts to go. But the underlying effect, the underlying feelings, the emotions, the visual messages that we pass through, they are more powerful than the words by themselves. So we focus more on the background messaging. We focus more on what we convey beyond words. And then words are the easiest part. You could always translate something in another language, but if the translation is a direct translation, then you don't always deliver an effective message, because translations are not the same in two different languages. So that's something that we focus on.
That's amazing. So I'm listening to you, and we have not talked anything about the syndication process of actually distributing and broadcasting and uploading and posting, and I think that's another radio show entirely. But percentage-wise, how does it work out between the percentage of manpower that is driving the repurposing side compared to the amount of manpower that it takes to do the syndication? I think that would be very telling to know what that looks like.
Right. I would, in fact, say that it is almost equal. They would almost fall into a 50-50 range because syndication is, it takes more time, it takes more effort. Whereas the design, it takes more time per piece. So it is a difference between whether someone spends more time on a single piece or whether they spend more time on a single piece at different times. For example, let's say there is a video or let's say there's a slide to be designed and designer would spend a couple of hours to make a perfect slide. And let's say syndication team, they would be distributing that to 65 different channels. So every day when they out of the 65 channels, slide sites probably would be 10. And if they have to distribute that to 10 different sites, they have to log into every site and then submit the message, follow all the guidelines for a particular site and distribute it. And also the QC team has to go through, verify it. And that entire thing almost takes similar amount of time. So it would be an equal amount of resource and equal amount of time that's taken. But if the number of syndication sites are lesser, let's say if it's a 20 syndication site, then the effort comes lower on that end. But beyond all this, when it comes to syndication, they have more tasks to perform than a design team. So, yeah, both would be on an equal basis. I would definitely say it's 50-50.
Wow, interesting. I didn't know. And it's cool that you can even see that with the way everything flows, but maybe you can see it even more clear. That speaks volumes, I think, just for the amount of effort that it takes to get this kind of thing out. Now, I know you've been working on something recently. Is it too early to ask you to give us a peek into LC and what that's all about?
No, I'm it's perfectly fine. It is almost the beta version is live right now. So we work with 200 plus agencies, and agencies are one of the favorite people for me to work with, favorite organization for me to work with, because they all need the solution. They all await and appreciate the solution, and their clients are desperate for it. So when agencies find what it is that we do, they grab it like crazy, and they make it as part of their product chain, or some of them make it as a primary product. So we always wanted a solution for agencies in a way it is powerful. So in the past, the agencies would copy the content. We would be providing the contents to them in the format that they need. Some of them would prefer Dropbox. Some would like Google Drive. Some would have their own project management system where they want us to upload. So they would all provide us with their own ways and systems, and we would send it there and upload it for their comfort. But now, over time, it's been, it has reached a point where those methods are not effective, primarily because, whenever there is a foreign element involved, let's say an external site, the communication between both of those are kind of a little bit hard. So let's say we upload something, the client comes back with a feedback. Now we have to remove it and then go back and re-edit it, and it almost doubles that process, and the client has to set this up separately for us. They have to create a separate Drive account or separate Dropbox account for this, and they have to, they do not have a complete understanding of the process at the initial stages, and they have to understand it a little bit to create the infrastructure. Some of the clients would need a project management system to update their clients, and when they try to create a project management system, they spend a lot of time creating it to understand the entire process, different sequences in it, what needs to be reported, and so on and so forth. So it was a time-consuming process for an easy adoption. So with the Leverage Center, which we created, it's easy for anyone to, as a reseller, to come in and use our white label platform. So this platform does not have our name as a key difference media anywhere. It does not refer to any of our employees. If you look at a normal Google Drive, you can always go and see who the document is shared to, but here you cannot even do that. You cannot see who has access to the document. You cannot see anything. You cannot find even a trace of the names or the brand, the colors or anything. This is 100% white label. It is all absolutely plain and blank for any client or any reseller to use it. And this enables them to just start selling it. They don't really have to set anything on their side, from reporting emails that goes out to the clients, or if they want the email to come to them and they want to forward it in any case or any manner, it is absolutely white label. Even if they want the email communication to happen, it happens from the Leverage Center, and it is not attributed to any individual. So this is the perfect reseller platform that people have been awaiting for, and this works seamlessly, and they really don't have to do even one single piece in that. 100% is taken care of from the moment they hand over the client till the day the final output is going out and report happens and the client feedback comes in. From the onboarding until client feedback, everything is perfectly into one seamless platform.
So clarify for me, is this a software? Is this a collection of Google Docs? Is this a program that's what are you saying is being scrubbed in these Google Docs, et cetera? Are you creating a membership site or a place where people can go and get all of this and it makes it easier for them to activate your programs within their customer base? I'm personally still disconnected on what is the tangible connection that represents the Leverage Center.
All right. This is based on Google Apps again, and this is the entire process from the beginning to end. So let's say when the client comes in, their documents would be shared, their articles would be shared, their design files would be shared, their design files would be delivered through this, their forms that they need to fill will happen through this, their reports and emails and updates would go through this, any questions and concerns that they have will be addressed through this. So this is the project management, this is the project delivery, this is the updates, communication. Everything happens at this place.
Okay, that sounds pretty exciting. So if I'm an affiliate and I sign up with you today, will I have access to this just by going to your affiliate page and signing
this
up?
This is not accessible via affiliate page. This is only after the project starts. So let's say you have a project that's starting. Then, because this is a project management system rather, so you need to have a live project to have access to the system. So if a live project is set up, then you have all your access and you can start seeing the files, you can see your folders, you can see what's happening. Everything would happen at that point in time. So this is not a phase before the project. This is after the project is awarded and the project execution starts. The only exception here is client onboarding. So there are cases when the client onboarding happens before the client officially initiates the project. So that sheet is available for any reseller to use from the Leverage Center. But apart from that, everything else happens purely after the project initiates.
Okay, that makes sense. So this becomes a powerful way for the reseller to integrate with Key Difference Media so that Key Difference Media truly becomes, that reseller suddenly has full access to all your resources without really any in between. It's almost as if you have taken up residence in their company. Does that make sense? Is the way I'm saying it?
Yeah, in most of the reseller programs with the different agencies, the agency would actually send an email to the client, and the client has to strip off their names and the website IDs from the signature, remove the forward message, remove the FWD on the top, and then forward the email to the client. Or if they send a message or send a report without the logo in a white label platform, they might remove the logo and send across. Still, they need to rebrand with their own logo and send it across. They have a lot of logistics involved there. If you look at any normal agency who is a reseller, they would always have a project manager at their end, project coordinator at their end, to do all this cleaning up and putting up the right names and removing all this different stuff before sending to and fro and acting as a communication engine. So all they do is receive the information, forward it here, and then receive the response back from the agency, forward to the client. So they do all this, which consumes a lot of time, energy, and it is not a productive thing for them to do. It is an added cost. So what if we can reduce their cost at their side? It just makes them more profitable and give them a platform which is ready to use right from the start to finish. Don't have to do anything. It's just there.
Wow. That is going to be, again, that's another industry, that's something that's not an industry standard to that level. That is going to be exciting, and I trust that our affiliates and resellers will appreciate that. Mr. Key, we're gonna end here with a few commercials as we go out, and thank you again so much for your time. That was really intriguing to get that close to your process. It left me a little bit short of breath. It's one of the things I know about you personally, that you are able to create beauty out of a systematic process And thanks for taking us that close to it and giving us a good idea of what it looks like on a day-to-day basis.
Perfect.
Perfect. All right. We're out of here with a few commercials. Thank you. Back next week, Wednesday, 9 a.m. on the 4D Leverage Radio Blog Talk Program.
4D Story is an entertaining way to promote products and services in both online and offline environments by broadcasting a fictional story with characters engineered around real life. 4D Story engages fans and encourages viral sharing. Do you have a charity that's stalled or struggling to find donors or simply unorganized? The Art of Charitable Giving can help you with programs and strategies to boost your leadership, management, fundraising, and marketing. We've turned charitable giving into an art. TheArtOfCharitableGiving.com